The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management or staff of Radio Kingston, WKNY. AM 1490, FM 1079, Kingston, New York.
Give myself to you completely.
Good morning and happy rainy Saturday. You are now listening to Nature Nuggets. I'm your host, Laurel Sutherland. And this show serves as your weekly invitation to take a little time to turn our attention towards the happenings of the more than human world around us. And to remind ourselves that nature is not out there somewhere at a distance, but in fact, all around us, all the time, no matter where we are. I'm sitting with our guest today. Actually, just now we're watching the flocks of chimney swifts swarm above us here in Midtown Kingston, as an example. And so, in fact, you know, when we slow down, even for short periods of time, we'll almost certainly notice some interesting creature or some fascinating ecological phenomenon that we easily would have missed if we just kept bustling through our human-focused days. And so we're very lucky, living in this region, of course, to be surrounded by diverse ecosystems and rich biodiversity. Much of that protected and made accessible to us, the public, through the hard-fought efforts of people like our guests today. We have Peter and Matt with the Open Space Institute live with us in the studio. And I'll say hello and welcome you both first, and then give a more proper introduction in a moment.
Thanks a lot for having us. Yeah. Great to be here.
Thank you for taking time out of your Saturday morning to join us in person. And so what we do with this program, what we're going to do today is what we do every week, is we invite guests on air who have developed some expertise in some corner of the natural world. So we've had dozens of great conversations with local scientists, authors, artists, conservationists, educators, birders, et cetera, et cetera. And the idea being that listeners may hopefully come away with a little bit deeper of an understanding of what we might encounter when we step outside. So the foundation of this show is ultimately the idea that people won't fight for what they don't love, and they can't love what they don't know. And so I'm excited to share also that as of this week, Nature Nuggets episodes are now posted across the main podcast streaming services. So you can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and more if you're interested in finding some of those archived conversations. So before I dive in to our opening segment, Who's About Town, I am going to take a quick interlude because I know that I am not alone in these often overwhelming and distressing times in finding a great deal of mental health benefits from spending even just a little bit of time outside each day. Even an hour down to Kingston Point Beach or Sleightsburg Spit can change my whole day and my whole frame of mind. And that's what this show is all about. But I feel I would be remiss not to also share with listeners that today, of course, is a national day of protest being called No Kings Day. And so there's over 2,000 individual protests being organized today across all 50 states. And we have one happening right here in Kingston. And I think many folks will remember Joan Baez famously said, action is the antidote to despair. And so if that feels right to you right about now, you could consider heading down to the Academy Green Plaza, right kind of between Midtown and Uptown here in Kingston, at 2:30 p.m. to join with communities in pushing, join with your community, pushing back against authoritarianism and advocating for democracy. So again, yeah, this is over 200 organizations are behind putting this together today. 2:30 p.m. at Academy Green. So with that, I will turn to Who's About Town. So this is a bit of a snapshot, ecological snapshot of what's happening. I'll just take a few moments to highlight some natural history observations that are going on this week since we last were on the air. And one thing that just has been amazing me, we've been putting a lot of plants in the ground in our garden. And, you know, after the first wave of spring, where there's just the miracle of emergence with the first leaves and the first greening of the land, a lot of that, you know, has happened and taken root. But right now, we just have the amount of biomass being added every single day with this wet weather and the warm temperatures is just incredible. We're watching just our own backyard, little postage stamp of land. There's so much more just physical material there than there was each week before. And I just love thinking about this because, of course, you know, I think intuitively we think about plants and trees as growing from the ground. And of course, they sort of do, right? They're rooted in the ground. But actually, the biomass, the bodies, the bulk of plants and trees is actually breathed in out of the atmosphere, right? Through photosynthesis. And so this right now feels like the huge earth inhalation is underway right now, where all the living creatures are just breathing in their bodies out of the air. And there's just something ineffably magical about that I like to ponder, even no matter how many times I've thought about it. This last week, did have a really great natural experience. We went up to Colgate Lake, one of our favorite places in the Catskills, and it was early season, so the water is still kind of cold, but we got in anyway. And there was a lot of creatures out and about. We saw pickerel frogs, which is the only place, it's one of the few places I've seen them reliably, but they were hopping all around. And they look like a leopard frog, but leopard frogs have sort of rounded spots, and pickerel have sort of square spots, handsome little frog. And what really struck me was the tiger swallowtails, the butterflies, were all out and about. They were covering the whole meadow and all the different kinds of blooming shrubs. Some of them had four or five swallowtails, you know, on each bush, which is the first of the season that I've seen that. And I read also that, so I always often draw from the Hudson River Almanac, email put out by the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation every Friday. You can get it free in your inbox. And it's very cool, cultivated sort of natural history observations from the week before. And there was an observation in there related to my observation of the swallowtails that the ones I was seeing, I think, were eastern tiger swallowtails, which are deep yellow and relative. I mean, they're big. They're a big butterfly, but relatively small considered to a giant swallowtail, which are even bigger, kind of lighter yellow color. And this has historically been a more southern species, and yet they have been moving north, and they are now reliably surviving the winter in our area in New York. So in the town of Saugerties, an observation was coming in that five large giants in pristine condition were basking in the early morning sunshine in a pollinator garden. So this is a relatively new addition that seems like is probably here to stay. Okay, I also have to take a moment, because we're reaching the middle of June, to talk about, this is the seasonal moment of the year for one of my favorite birds to talk about. There's only one endemic bird to the northeastern United States, and it's named a Bicknell's thrush. And if you aren't familiar with these ones, everything about them is really kind of amazing. And this is the time, if you're going to see one, that you can do it. So this was a bird that was first described into science by an amateur ornithologist in the 1880s, right here on Slide Mountain, which, if it was clear, I might be able to see out the window here. But Slide Mountain, tallest peak in the Catskills, is where this bird was first, you know, noticed to be its own species. But it really wasn't split officially from the gray-cheeked thrush into its own species till 1995, which is just amazing. So a very specialized, you know, sort of local iconic creature that we have here. And they have a very specific breeding range. They only breed in this area above about 3,500 feet in dense conifer forests, fir and spruce. And so you have to go to the very tops of our mountains around here if you're going to find one. And even then, they really only sing at dawn and dusk. And they look so much like a gray-cheeked thrush that it's really hearing that song that you need. So it becomes quite a mission. You either need to start kind of hiking in the dark and get to that peak, you know, at sunrise, or they will start doing it again to a lesser extent in the dusk. So my plan is to take the Juneteenth holiday this Thursday and get up there to the top of the mountain by dusk to see and try to find some Bicknell's thrush. But they're super fascinating. Scientists took a long time trying to figure out their mating systems, and I don't know that they fully do yet, but they do know that males don't really hold strict territories, and several males may sing from the same area. And they also they're very promiscuous. They share partners. And so many nests contain young from different males. And then males will move around and take care of young in several nests, which is just a highly unusual way for birds to do it. Probably has something to do with that very specialized habitat. And my hope for this bird, there is a project underway to try to rename all the birds that are named for human beings. And so the original name of this bird was called the Catskill Thrush. And so I am hopeful that in another couple of years' time, we may once again be referring to this bird as the Catskill Thrush. But meanwhile, you can find Westkill Brewery here produces a Bicknell Thrush Pale Ale, and some of the proceeds from that go to preserving habitat for the Bicknell's Thrush. So I love that they're repping our local species like that. Okay, a couple other quick observations from the past week. This one, again, also drawn from the Hudson River Almanac. There was a report of a quote-unquote epic shorebird fallout. This was in the Black Dirt region down in Orange County. But I've spoken about this concept of a fallout before because I've traveled to try to find them, you know, on the Gulf Coast. But a fallout is a particular phenomenon that can happen during migration, where you have large numbers of birds on the move, often flying at night, and then you'll have a weather system of some sort that is some sort of severe weather or wind that's pushing the wrong direction. And so all these birds that are trying to get to their, you know, final destination will land unexpectedly at once. And when it happens, it can be quite a phenomenon. It can look like, you know, just there's birds scattered all over the ground or all over the trees. You know, sometimes they're stunned, sometimes exhausted. But I usually think of it with perching birds, songbirds, warblers and tanagers and that kind of thing. But this last week, just in our Hudson Valley region, it apparently happened with shorebirds. And so there was a dozen different species involved, including killdeer, semi-palmated and black-bellied plovers, a bunch of different spotted sandpipers, hundreds and hundreds, white-rumped, least, semi-palmated, spotted. There were short-billed dowitchers, dunlin, ruddy turnstones, red knot, and even a red-necked phalarope, which is a very cool little strange bird. They're actually they're a tiny little shorebird that swims. Most shorebirds don't do that. And they're reversely sexually dimorphic, so actually the females are more colorful than the males. And they're just a very unusual little bird and not something I would ever expect to see around here. So there was a lot of excitement from some birders. Once the word got out, people were able to flock, so to speak, from far around. All right, let's see. Another quick update I will give is that a lot of people have been monitoring the bald eagle nests in the region, right? They're different numbers. So there's one in Ulster County called Bald Eagle Nest NY-142. And for months now, folks have been observing and tracking the progress of these birds, which have been using the same nests area for many, many, many years. And so these particular eagles in Ulster County began their egg laying on February 4th. And then egg hatching started March 8th. And so now 4 months later, the ready-to-fledge nestlings this last week were observed hopping around the nest, kind of opening their wings and all of a sudden leaping off of the branch for their very first flight ever. So this is a very clumsy, you know, the regal, bald eagles can be quite regal later in life, but these young fledglings can be very clumsy and, you know, they don't really know how to soar yet and they don't know how to make their own food. So their parents continue to, you know, feed them for a while after that. Okay. I think I will wrap up maybe the Who's About Town section there and turn towards introducing our guests. And so we are joined live in the studio today by Peter Karras, who is Vice President of Parks and Stewardship with the Open Space Institute. Welcome again, Peter.
Hi, Laura. Welcome.
And we're also joined by Matt Decker, who is Land Project Manager with the Open Space Institute.
Hi. Great to be here. Thanks again.
Absolutely. So glad to be talking about the incredible work of OSI. It's just, it really is impressively voluminous. But I thought maybe we could start, before we dig into the work of the organization, with maybe you guys just giving a brief introduction to yourselves about how you got into this work and how long you've been doing this kind of work.
Sure. Thanks, Laurel. I'm Peter Karras, Vice President of Parks and Stewardship at OSI. My background is I'm a landscape architect. And from New York State, after college, moved down into the Hudson Valley and worked in land development for an engineering and surveying firm. So a dozen years under my belt, kind of cutting my teeth on how to develop land. Not the good kind of development, I'd say. Found myself at a small design firm working on historic sites and parks. Through the 2008 to 2010, when the economy wasn't so great, I found myself in a small practice working for myself. Ended up working, doing some projects for the Mohonk Preserve in Ulster County, down outside of New Paltz, in a series of escalating kind of trail planning projects as that nature preserve was growing. Through that, met the great folks at OSI, and 10 years later, here I am. Very lucky to be able to work on parks and trails projects and also oversee our constantly evolving and changing portfolio of land, not only in New York, but now in the Southeast, South Carolina, North Carolina, and really able to work with just great people and do great work.
Excellent. Yeah. Thank you. Well, speaking of the great people you work with, Matt, how about you?
Yeah, my name is Matt Decker. I've been with OSI for just a little over 3 years now, but I worked for other kind of conservation organizations in the Hudson Valley, and I work on our land team. So my job is to work with willing landowners to protect their land through voluntary land transactions, either through just directly buying the land or somewhat less commonly for us by working with landowners on conservation easements. Mm-hmm. And then also working with our other kind of conservation partners and public partners like New York State to kind of figure out what the long-term conservation kind of outcome is going to be on those properties. But I'm very lucky to be able to get outside for my job. And I loved your Who's About Town segment there because, just tangential to my work, I do get to be out there making those observations. And I do feel very lucky to be able to do what I love here with OSI. I grew up in like the White Plains area, had a little couple acre patch of woods behind my house that I just kind of grew up running around in, picking up ticks and picking up old dirty feathers and whatever you could find. And I just think everybody should be able to have the experience of being able to get outside and experience nature in whatever way they can. So,
well, thank you for sharing that. And I love how often the origin story of guests who are brought onto the show involves, a tale of being a kid running around in the woods. And that it seems, it's a very strong through line. And so the work that y'all do really helps ensure that there'll be more stories like that going forward for future generations. Well, before we dive in, I'm actually going to go ahead and take a quick break to hear some words from our community and then really look forward to hearing more about the work of Open Space Institute.
What does community radio mean to you?
I think of radio for the people. Broad, wide-reaching, people-driven.
Radio Kingston, many voices, one community.
Hi, I'm Katie Scott-Childress, president of the Ulster County Library Association. If you're an Ulster County resident, you now have online access to 5 major daily newspapers for free. The Ulster County Library Association is providing the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, the Chicago Tribune, and the Los Angeles Times to read online. The newspaper subscriptions are supported by funds from the Ulster County Legislature. As librarians, we want to ensure that people have access to reputable news sources so that you don't hit a paywall when you're trying to learn about important events. You just need a library card, and library cards are free. You can get one at your local library or on their website. To find out more or access the papers, click Read at the Ulster County Library Association's website, uclib.org.
Hi, I'm Kevin Godby. Join me Monday nights at 9 for Kingston Happenings. I'll help you stay informed about upcoming events, new businesses, initiatives from local nonprofits, and much more. I'll be chatting with movers, shakers, doers, and dreamers, the interesting people and personalities that are making things happen in our community, always with great music from local musicians. Kingston Happenings is the radio extension of my website that tells you about everything that's going on in the Kingston area, kingstonhappenings.org. Kingston Happenings, Monday nights at 9 p.m. here on Radio Kingston, AM 1490, FM 107.9, and anytime on radiokingston.org.
Circle of Friends for the Dying is hosting an in-person Death Cafe at Circle Home Tuesday, June 17th. Death Cafes are gatherings of people, often strangers, to drink tea or coffee, eat sweet and savory treats, and have a confidential conversation that breaks the taboo against talking about death and dying. It is a discussion group, not a grief or counseling session. Admission is free, you'll just need to register online. In-person Death Cafe, Tuesday, June 17th, from 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. at Jim and Lisa's Circle Home, 100 Wirt Street in Kingston. To register, and for more information, circlehome.org. Welcome back to Nature Nuggets. This is your host, Laurel Sutherland. And we are talking today with folks from the Open Space Institute. And so we have been just starting to talk a little bit about the incredible work that this organization does. So we have Peter Karras, who's Vice President of Parks and Stewardship, and Matt Decker, Land Project Manager. And we just did brief introductions for you two personally, but I wonder, before we kind of dig into specific projects, if you could kind of, if listeners might not be familiar with OSI, talk a little. I know you just had your 50th anniversary, so that's a lot of history. If you could kind of just lay the foundation for, you know, what's the origin story of OSI and what's the kind of main thrust of work that y'all do?
Sure. As you said, OSI just celebrated its 50-year anniversary last year, starting in 1974 officially. The funny story of that is OSI, from what I've heard, started with organizational papers in a shoebox in an attorney's office, and was handed off to one of our founders, John Adams, a titan of conservation, saying, maybe you can do something with this. that has now blossomed 50 years later into a very dynamic and diverse organization. We protect land at our core. It's all about land protection and protecting the places that support things that we can't live without. We need clean water. We need clean air. We want healthy communities. We safeguard the places that are worth living for, like parks and trails, and plant and animal habitat. You know, all these things that we need to live, OSI is working to protect. We've helped protect millions of 2.5 million acres across our programs over 50 years. But our home, our deepest roots are right here in the Hudson Valley. We've been doing tremendous work here for a long time. We've got really deep relationships with communities, with other organizations. So along with land acquisition, we also work on funding and advocacy at the state and federal levels. We bring science into the land protection, not necessarily doing the science, but working with the people that are gathering this data and information, packaging it, making it so people can understand and are able to use it when they're making conservation decisions. We support grassroots efforts a lot of times in urban areas for smaller groups that need fiscal sponsorship or really just a place to fledge and grow before they can work for themselves. Where my focus is in the fun parts too are the park enhancement projects. Really trying to think about how to make places available, more welcoming, and just so that everybody has a great experience and everybody can get out into nature.
Wow, thank you. I mean, that's an enormous breadth and depth of work. 2.5 million acres. I just to try to even wrap around that, you know, the scale of that is really impressive and a benefit to us all. You know, I wonder maybe if you could talk a little bit about sort of the process. You mentioned a lot of different things, but as far as, you know, going about choosing what, you know, what areas of land to prioritize for preservation. So that'd be, I guess, the first question, and then a little of the process of how does that then go forward from there? And I'm sure it's case by case, often very different, but as a model in general, how do you do that?
Sure. Yeah, this is Matt. It depends. We work across a very wide geography. So we've done work as far north as Canada and as far south as Florida. Our direct land protection work, which is what I do, is kind of centered in New York and some in surrounding states, and South Carolina and some in surrounding states. So the way we work really depends on which of those geographies we're talking about. But in New York State, where we've done a huge amount of this work, and as Peter was saying, it's really kind of the crucible of our organization, it starts from a lot of different directions. You know, we do focus a lot on science and climate science, and how can we most strategically deploy our limited resources as a entire conservation community, not just our organization. Our science team creates and develops data or provides tools that give access to existing data for ourselves to use, but also for the conservation community in general to be able to make these decisions on how to strategically deploy our resources. So that's number one. Number two is we work a lot with local conservation partners, New York State. We cannot know about every single geography that we work in, although we do have a lot of on-the-ground experience. We also rely on the on-the-ground experience of our local partners. So sometimes work comes to us through local partners saying, hey, can you come and help us with this? And our local partners know that we have a lot of expertise in working with landowners and kind of lining up these transactions in order to protect these special places. And then a lot comes from our state partners. You know, the New York State Open Space Plan, for example, lays out the conservation goals of New York State. And so we look at that see when opportunities to protect land that aligns with those stated goals comes up, we can be very responsive and go in, kind of seize on those opportunities, tee up the land, secure it, secure an agreement with the landowner, kind of get things cleaned up and tee it off to be added to New York State land, whether that's in the Catskills with the DEC or in like Minnewaska area with New York State Parks. We work very closely with those two agencies. So those are just a kind of few avenues Sure. where the land comes into, these projects come into our realm.
I read, just like looking into some of your work, that I think that OSI has played a role in doubling the size of Minnewaska State Park.
Yes, at least I would say, and uh-huh. that work continues. Just yesterday, I was on two different properties that we are working on that will be added to Minnewaska State Park, and we'd like to continue that momentum. Yeah, it's an amazing, beautiful, unique place.
Well, since we got brought to there, would you want to tell us a little bit more about especially the one in particular?
Well, sure. And I will talk about my part of the work, but sure. also I'll pass it off to Peter because Great. There's a huge amount of our parks team work and footprint there in Minnewaska. But one of the ones I was lucky to be on yesterday is the privately owned land for now that houses Verkeeterkill Falls. And if you've ever hiked in from Sam's Point, in just a couple of miles, you can arrive at this amazing, epic waterfall that both the Long Path and the Schwangunk Ridge Trail, two kind of regional long-distance trails, go right past. Mm. And those trails have always been on private property. Those trails don't have secure tenure at that location. OSI was able to work with that landowner. We're under agreement to add kind of the falls and those trails finally to Minnewaska State Park. OSI will purchase that land, hold it for a period of time. Sometimes that period of time is short, and sometimes it's you know, up to 5 years or sometimes even longer than that. And as I said earlier, tee it up and get it added to Minnewaska. So I was just out there hiking yesterday and hiking through the amazing kind of globally rare ecosystem of the dwarf pine barrens as you go out there. And it's just an amazing landscape. And then there is the work of making this land more welcoming and accessible. And that's Peter's work.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks, Matt. It's really a great place to collaborate cross-programmatically. And Minnewaska is such a special place, not only for New York State, but it's very dear to OSI's heart, along with doubling the size of the park over the past 30 years. The park's work has really rehabilitated, which will be the end of this year, about 18 miles of the historic carriage road network, which has really opened up what is truly a wilderness park so close to New York City. These carriage roads really open up access to so many people because they're generally wide and flat. And the way that they built them back in the late 1800s, very scenic and picturesque as they follow the contour and come out to viewpoints. It's just an amazing network of trails that we've been able to raise money and put effort into restoring. The Verkeeterkill Falls is another special place at Minnewaska. In the Sam's Point area, that along with the land protection work, which is adding the tallest waterfall in the Shawangunks to the state park, the parks team is working to plan and ultimately will rehabilitate the Verkeeterkill Falls Trail, thinking about accessibility, thinking about making it safer for folks to walk that trail, to access that special place. And that'll include tread improvements to the existing trail, some reroutes, and a new bridge over the Verkeeterkill that will bring people across to where there's just an incredible viewpoint of the falls. So really bringing all of this talent and expertise that we have in-house to one particular project is really rewarding.
Wow, it's so amazing. We are in desperate need of some good stories these days. And so it's wonderful to hear about this. And really sits on, I know, the momentum of, you know, many decades of work. And I thought, since we're kind of digging in here to Minnewaska, that maybe we could back up a little bit and just talk some about the Gunks a little bit. You know, it's such a unique place. And I think at first glance, you know, it could kind of seem like, oh, it's a spur of the Catskills kind of, but actually, you know, geologically, ecologically, it's a very, very unique place. And I read, you know, I think in the 1960s, there wasn't a single acre, you know, of land protected in the Gunks. And now it's an extraordinary network, you know, that I know y'all have been, you know, largely responsible for. So, but I wondered if we could just, you know, talk just a little bit about what is it about the Gunks? Why are they so interesting and cool from sort of a scientific, but also just a recreational perspective?
I'll start. So the Gunks, they are different from the Catskills in a lot of ways. The Shawangunk Ridge is really a ribbon of the Appalachian spine. And you can really trace that ribbon from the Rosendale Trestle in Rosendale all the way down through New Jersey and into Pennsylvania, all the way to Maryland. It changes names in New Jersey to the Kittatinny Mountains, but it's really the same strip ribbon of the ridge. And it's different in a lot of ways. One, geologically, it's different than the Catskills. There's this layer of Shawangunk conglomerate, which is a kind of like a quartz cement type rock, very, very hard. They would make millstones out of it in the past. It is super hard and durable, and it's underlaid by a layer of shale.
Right.
So that's why you have this. You see the ridge in Ulster County. It's this long angle trajectory. That's because everything underneath it has been eroded away and this harder stone sits out. It's also good for rock climbing. It is really the rock climbing spot east of the Mississippi to do that kind of recreational activity. And then the being laced with these roads, especially in Ulster County, is very unique and really was the inspiration for Acadia National Park and the carriage roads that are built in that national park really started in the Gunks just to really get people out into nature. That was what they were trying to do with these historic mountain resorts, was to bring people in and then get them out of the dirty city at the time and get them out into nature. But also that geology brings along a lot of unique ecosystems. So the way that that rock breaks, there's lots of crevasses mm-hmm. and lots of places where you have really incredible microclimates. There are ice caves, we call them, up on the ridge where snow and ice will stay down into the summer.
Yeah.
Will be cooler or snow and ice. The geology, the rock itself creates a layer of soil, thin soils. That's where you get the pitch pine barren up on the top. That's just scattered with low bush blueberry as well, very unique. It really acts because it's this ribbon of land. It is an avian flyway for migrating birds. They follow these geological features as they migrate north and south every year. So tying into your description of the Catskill thrush, yeah. You know, it creates these unique places that bird species can use to navigate. Yeah.
Amazing. Well, thank you for giving that kind of foundation. I think I read that 35 different ecosystem types have been, you know, described just in the Gunks, which yeah. It's really not that huge of an area, you know, geographically, but really unique. And so, beyond obviously Minnewaska is sort of the prized, you know, kind of heart. But beyond that, there's been so many different efforts, right, of conservation that have been starting to just link up and connect, that it's starting to be, you know, a large percentage of the overall landscape there.
Yeah. And one of the things we're thinking about regional landscape connectivity is, you know, we've been working historically in called the mountain areas, the Catskills, the Shawangunks, the Hudson Highlands. Have been really kind of historic OSI land protection focus areas. And we're thinking now in the past 10 years, and especially through COVID with this just people wanting to get outside and into safe places, how do you connect those places? So in 2020, we kind of rallied around an idea of connectivity through these old rail corridors, which we call Growing Greenways. The Growing Greenways is a vision in Ulster, Sullivan, and Orange counties west of Hudson to really connect these landscapes through these old railroad corridors. There are seven of them that we've identified, and one of them includes the carriage road network over the Shawangunk Ridge. And really, we're working both in land acquisition and also in parks planning and trail development across all seven of those corridors simultaneously. We're working with all sorts of partners. The counties have been really kind of instrumental in that work because they're not just trails, they're actually transportation systems. And they can provide a whole host of benefits to communities in terms of connectivity and health and mental and physical health and economic activity. They're real economic drivers. And these towns and communities, they were all connected by either the canal or the railroad. And that's how, you know, the world worked, and through change, through the transportation changes over time, they've become abandoned, but the infrastructure's there. I mean, we're focusing right now on the O&W corridor, which mm-hmm. starts right here in Kingston. Mm-hmm. The county made a great new trailhead project off of Washington Avenue and a connector over to Hurley. That O&W trail runs all the way down to Port Jervis on the Pennsylvania border. It's 57 miles in total. It would be a trail of statewide significance, my term, among others that we're working on. And so we're in the middle of a feasibility study funded by a state grant and other private match to reimagine that connection and figure out what it would take. What parcels what is the preferred route? What land do we need to acquire? What improvements do we need to put in place so that we can reactivate that for the communities that it touches. So
what an amazing thing. You mentioned earlier that, you know, background in landscape architecture, and what an incredible version to be doing landscape scale architecture of this sort. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Nature Nuggets. I'm your host, Laurel Sutherland, and you've been hearing from Peter Karas. He's the Vice President of Parks and Stewardship with the Open Space Institute. And also with us here in the studio is Matt Decker, Land Project Manager, also with Open Space Institute. And I just wanted to say that if you cut just a piece of this conversation and you want to hear more, this show will be archived, like all of our episodes are. You can go to radiokingston.org and see it there. We also have a little bit of an Instagram presence. If you're on that platform, at HV Nature Nuggets is where you can find us there. We post throughout the week and put our shows up. And then we also, as of this week, are out on the podcast streaming platform. So Spotify, Apple, etc. So Peter, thank you. Peter's been telling us about the Growing Greenways effort. And yeah, these are really, I just, after, you know, being in Kingston for a number of years, finally really discovered the incredible opportunity of leaving my house on a bicycle in Midtown Kingston and taking the Wallkill Trail, you know, down to, I mean, we just went to Rosendale. Obviously, you can continue to go further, but just an incredible to just really out the front door of the house, just casually on a bicycle, to all of a sudden within a few minutes be in the woods, and there's swamps and there's mature forests, and there the birds were incredible, and the caves, as you mentioned, just really, you know, that it's such an urban core here in Midtown, and within a few minutes there you are having this, you know, extraordinary experience in nature, and it's flat and accessible, and clearly a lot of work went into, you know, making that as accessible as it is. So thank you for that, first of all. Well, let's see. Let's talk about let's talk a little bit more about this other connector project, the vision for the Catskills Shawangunk connector. We've talked about sort of, you know, what makes the gunks so special, but lay out a little bit of what the vision is for this project.
Sure. Yeah, thanks. This is Matt. You know, we use that word corridor in a couple different ways here. Peter was just talking about a corridor, which is a recreational corridor, and they don't need to be mutually exclusive.
Sure.
But we also think a lot about the connectivity between protected areas and continuing to buffer out the existing kind of nodes of protected areas like the Catskills, like Minnewaska and the other protected areas along the Gunks. But if you look at the map, or if you look at any of those kind of layers of scientific data that I was just talking about earlier, it makes logical sense to try to connect those two major areas of protected land in the Catskills and in the Gunks. And OSI really took a giant step towards making that connection in the year 2000, I believe, or it could have been 2001, with the purchase of the Lundy Estate, which was over 5,000 acres, which became what is now Vernoykill State Forest, and then part of also Sundown Wild Forest within the Catskill line. And that really stretched the Catskill, you know, the green splotches of Catskill protected land down towards tantalizingly close to Minnewaska State Park. Now we're working on, I would say, two other, you know, recent major land purchase projects. And one is what we call the Catskill Shawangunk Conservation Corridor. And it's sort of right off to the side of those two areas in the interstitial connecting area between the Catskills and the Gunks. We've pieced together from six different landowners 2,000 acres, which we are working with the DEC on, and our expectation is that it will become a new DEC, likely a state forest, though, you know, they have to go through their process with that before they make that official declaration. But it is part of this corridor where, you know, if you're a bird or if you're a bear and you're looking to get from one place to another, you know, you're very likely to pass through some of this land. It first came onto our radar. You were asking earlier about how we come across these things, because the community, the town of Wawarsing, actually established a critical environmental area, which is an indication, you know, it has kind of ramifications for development projects, but it's an indication that this is an area that's important to the community for some ecological purpose. And that was centered around what they call cedar swamp. It's not a cedar to be found there. It's a black spruce swamp, actually. Very large and ecologically valuable swamp, which is located on the first of those six purchases that we made there. It is an amazing place. It has, you know, snowshoe hare. It has ancient black gum trees. I have yet to find the most ancient of them, but there is some data from the 90s where they cored some of these trees and found that they were just almost 500 years old at that time. So I haven't found that exact tree, but somewhere out there are black gum trees that are over 500 years old.
Wow.
And that doesn't come along every day. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I had no idea really that within our immediate vicinity there were still any trees left of that age.
Yeah. There's another Catskill project that mm-hmm. I could touch on if you don't mind.
Of course,
you know, this
please.
Is kind of more in the core of the Catskill Forest, but yeah. It's something that we are proud of. From just a few weeks ago, OSI purchased over 3,100 acres.
Wow.
Of forested land in the Catskill Park. It's in, yeah, within the Catskill Blue Line. Again, working with DEC, it will be added to the Willowemuck Wild Forest. I hope I'm getting that name right. I think I am. I did not personally work on that project. We have a few different project managers in New York State. My colleague, Tom Gravel, worked on that one, but it's very exciting. It kind of sits right on the watershed line between the Willowemuck, which flows then to the Delaware, and the Neversink, which flows to the Neversink reservoir. And I just love the idea that both the city of Philadelphia, who they draw their drinking water mainly from the Delaware River, and the city of New York, who draws their drinking water mainly from these Catskill reservoirs, drink water that flows across this yeah. property, you know, and that's also true of the city of Trenton and other communities along the New York City aqueduct line. So many tens of millions of people drink water that comes yeah. off of this land.
Wow, over 3,000 acres in a single purchase. I, you know, in this region, there can't be many of those left.
No. And in fact, it'll be the biggest addition to the Catskill Forest Preserve in over 25 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. That's the first I've heard of that. And it sounds, obviously, it sounds like a lot of this work you do is very collaborative with lots of different agencies and other organizations. But, and you did mention that some of the land you'll hold for a period of years as you're working on it and then, you know, transition to a, you know, state park or state forest. Does OSI also kind of maintain and manage preserves of its like that sort of like Scenic Hudson has that model that they do that too. There's examples of those as well.
There are definitely examples, although not to that extent that yeah. our partner Scenic Hudson operates and manages park preserves. But two that I can speak to. One is right here in Ulster County in New Paltz, our River to Ridge Trail.
Mm.
The River to Ridge Trail connects the Walca Valley Rail Trail with the Carriageo Network. On the Shawangunk Ridge and really filled a gap of connectivity for people to safely, in a non-motorized way, get to from the village to the resources on the ridge. And OSI, again, it's a great land parks collaboration project. We acquired that farmland west of the Wallkill River
mm-hmm.
and then went forth and developed this, essentially a brought the Carriageo Network down to the village. It is super popular. It's wide and flat and accessible to a lot of people. Last year, we saw our millionth visit on the trail
wow.
since 2018. So we're averaging over 150,000 trips a year
wow.
Across our three trail counters. And it's just and every day, every weather situation, there are people on that trail. I mean, it is literally transformed,
yeah.
I think, that community and connected them to what they see, but couldn't get there.
Right.
The second property that we're really proud of, again, started as a land protection project, is in the heart of the Adirondacks, right on the south side of the High Peaks Wilderness Area, in the town of Newcomb, old place called Tahawus. It was literally an old mine, and in the OSI protected about 10,000 acres in that project, which included this historic ghost town, village of Adirondack with no K. And it was some dilapidated buildings at literally the end of the road. You cannot go on the road any further. We have transformed the Upper Works, we now call it. We've transformed the Upper Works. It's now the southern entrance into the High Peaks Wilderness. There is a trailhead. We recently restored the last remaining historic cottage, McNaughton Cottage, which actually has historical connections back to Teddy Roosevelt visiting the Adirondacks at the time President McKinley was shot in Buffalo, and he started his famed midnight ride to North Creek, literally from this cottage that he was staying at. But also, you know, some of the old remains of the old structures are there. There's a lot of interpretive signage. There's a trail along, this is the headwater of the Hudson River, is on this property. There's a trail along the headwater of the Hudson River. There's all this old mining infrastructure, 70-foot stone blast furnace, and old you can see remains of the old water power plant that they had. Just amazing stuff happening in the 1850s that you can still see and experience. And it's been transformed. Yeah, it's just amazing. And so those are two places that we really don't do this often, but those are two places that we've protected, we've kind of made into a recreational resource, and we're managing.
Yeah. Amazing. Well, I'm delighted to hear about that personally. I'm going to be heading up for a camping trip to that exact region around the High Peaks in a couple weekends. So I'm looking forward to checking that out. Gosh, it's just so impressive. I mean, taken in total, the way that this transforms leaves a legacy for just generations of people to have access to wild places and for ecosystems to recover from, you know, centuries of abuse is just, extraordinary and very heartening to hear about. And we're going to return back to this in just a moment, but we're going to take a final break to hear some more words from our community.
Hi, I'm Desiree Lyle, board member at Taproot Community Land Trust. Taproot CLT, a nonprofit organization serving Ulster County whose goal is to provide permanently affordable housing. Because this movement must be led and advocated for by community members, we invite you to join Taproot to help advance our vision to provide long-term affordable housing for folks in and around Kingston. Opportunities include the Community Outreach Committee to develop and implement Taproot's communication strategy, the Operations Committee responsible for day-to-day operations, and the Portfolio Expansion Committee to help bring new homes into Taproot's portfolio and oversee the home buying process for potential Taproot homeowners. And as Taproot continues to grow, we are looking for passionate and experienced community members to join our board of directors. To find out more, click Get Involved at taprootclt.org.
Radio Kingston.
Many voices.
Many voices.
Many voices.
One community.
Hi, this is Peter Wetzler from Sound Forms, Classical Music and Beyond. We're on Sunday afternoons from 2 to 4 p.m. here on Radio Kingston. Each week we travel through time with music from the Middle Ages and Renaissance through classical, romantic, and contemporary classical periods to new music that's happening today, both locally and around the world. We'll also feature live performances and conversations with composers and performers from our local Kingston area and beyond. That's Sound Forms, Classical Music and Beyond with me, Peter Wetzler, Sunday afternoons from 2 to 4 here at Radio Kingston, AM 1490, FM 1079, and anytime at radiokingston.org.
Hello, welcome back to Nature Nuggets. I'm your host, Laurel Sutherland, and today we are talking with Peter Karras and Matt Decker, both with the Open Space Institute, about the incredible work that they and their organization do over the last 50 years, preserving tens and tens, millions actually, of acres of land, but certainly hundreds of thousands here in New York, and so many different exciting projects. The Growing Green Raids effort, we've been talking about the Catskills Sean Gunk Connector Project, and lots of individual, you know, amazing places that give us, as locals or visitors, opportunities to get out to some of our amazing wild places. And we've just got a few minutes left because the hour went by quickly. But I was hoping, you know, I'd love to leave with some inspirations about, you know, if folks are looking to get out and about in the coming months now that we've entered the warm seasons. I know you two have some insider information by being the work you do and that you get out into the field quite a bit. So, yeah, any kind of pro tips you might have for places that you would, you know, tell people to maybe consider going and visiting?
Sure, we're both jumping. We love to go outside.
So I will say, just being local to Kingston, I would encourage folks to make a visit to the Bluestone Wild Forest, which is right up off Route 28. Mm-hmm. That's an OSI project. There was a land acquisition project where we acquired an inholding in that larger wild forest, and actually developed a connector trail connecting two pretty popular mountain biking systems around Onteora Lake and Jockey Hill. So if you want to visit a great place that you can walk, that you can mountain bike, that's really close to here, I would say Bluestone Wild Forest right up off Route 28 is a great spot.
Excellent. I feel like it gets sometimes overlooked because there are so many amazing spots, but that's probably maybe the closest to Kingston. I know you had one too.
Oh, yeah. Thanks. I mean, there's so many to mention, but I guess proximal to Kingston, and you said during the hot weather, I do love that section of the Wallkill Valley Rail Trail that runs through the old cement mines. And it's like you will just be running or biking or walking on the hottest day, and you'll just get hit in the face with this refreshing, cool air that is flowing out of those old mines. And it's a kind of a fun place to go on the hottest days. The only other time I remember having that kind of sensation is when you're like walking down the street, maybe in the city or something, and a store's got their door open with the air conditioning blasting and they're trying to get you to come in. So this is a much more sustainable, natural air conditioning that you can go enjoy.
It really is an incredible experience, even just riding your bike, to get blasted with that 55 degree air on an 85 degree day. Well, Matt, I know you're a runner, and I wanted to give you a moment to highlight this cool project.
Well, yeah, thanks. You know, when we were talking about Verkeeterkill Falls earlier, I wanted to mention we rely a lot on the support of our local partners, and there is a unique story there. Verkeeterkill Falls, we're partnering with an organization called Run Wild. They have a mission to raise funds for land conservation and stewardship in the Hudson Valley and beyond by organizing running races and through other fundraising activities. You know, a small part of the race fees get put into a fund, and I believe this is the first land protection project that they're going to put some of those funds into. And I think something like 2/5 of the purchase price on that Verkeeterkill Falls is going to be provided by Run Wild. And I just love that story of users of these trails and these public lands generating through their use a fund, you know, a resource that can be then used to further protect the public lands. And I just wanted to give them a shout out.
Awesome. That's fantastic. And yeah, I just want to say that if you, the Open Space Institute has a great website, and if you look up, they have these wonderful things called story maps. So a number of the different projects and, you know, initiatives that we've talked about on the air today have their own dedicated story map pages with little videos and pictures and maps. And it's quite interactive and can really be a great way to learn more. Yeah, I also want to mention something for this summer. I just got a great message from the Hudson River Sloop Clearwater Project, and they are inviting people to paddle for the Hudson. So you can do 20 mile, 60 mile, 100 mile sort of self-organized trips to support the Hudson River Sloop Clearwater, and of course their mission to protect and preserve the Hudson River. And so it's an opportunity to grow our intergenerational community of Hudson River advocates. And so whether you have a canoe, a kayak, a paddleboard, every mile paddled supports their education and advocacy. And if you don't have a boat, they have ways to connect you with partners. They have a growing list of local outfitters that'll provide discounted rentals on kayaks and other vessels. So don't let that be stop you from getting out on the water. All right, well, there's our cue that we're at the top of the hour. But Matt and Peter, thank you so much for being on the air, and even more so for the amazing work that you do.
Thanks, Laurel. Thanks for having us.
I really appreciate it.
All right, take care.
Give myself.